Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Brian O'Driscoll, good evening.
Good evening. How are you, Dave?
I'm not so bad. It was an interesting Pro 14 weekend. Obviously, the weeks and the games in the immediate week before Champions Cup semi-finals can tend to go under the radar a little, but there was a couple of standout results, particularly the fact that Leinster beaten at home by Treviso for the first time in 18 attempts from Treviso's point of view. But I guess everything that happened on the field has been slightly overshadowed by the statement that we got on, over the course of the weekend from the IRFU and from Ulster Rugby about Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olling. Both of them have had their contracts revoked. Craig Gilroy's had his time away from the game extended slightly to towards the end of this month. Today we heard Jackson being linked to Claremont. That's been rubbished by Claremont. Olding being connected with a move to the Premiership champions Exeter. They've said that Olding is not on their radar. First up, it's probably the decision most of us expected. Is it the right one?
I think from the IRFU perspective, I think they were probably left with no option but to sever ties with Stuart and Paddy. You can probably only speculate really as to whether it's based on moral or commercial grounds. I'd imagine probably a bit of both, but there's no doubt, which was well documented in the papers at the weekend, that there was pressure from sponsors. But I think that was probably fueled as well by, probably public concern and unease about what their potential future might be.
So which I think
they went Friday night hand in hand
before the Ospreys game.
Number
of protests outside the stadium, and you wouldn't imagine that was something that was going to just dissipate. That was going to continue.
Yeah, it was going to continue, and we got a taste of it in the Kingspan Stadium. And had the decision been different, I think you probably would have seen more of that, and I think the IRFU moved swiftly to try and end this situation and end the slur on the reputation of the game that has been in Ireland over the course of the last few months as this case has been ongoing.
So it's obviously a huge blow to the two players, but we know the reasons why they've lost their jobs. We have seen the detail of these messages, the WhatsApp messages, the text messages, and the disrespect towards women that came out over the course of the trial, but that was part of this review that the RFU and Ulster Rugby conducted. So I wonder, a young professional today, maybe future professionals, will this lead to a culture change? Is this a little bit of a wake-up call that a lot of these guys maybe just need to have a little look at themselves and wonder, ask themselves the question, do I behave in this way? If my WhatsApp messages were trawled through or ended up in the public domain, or the RFU got their hands on them and went through them, could I end up in a similar situation? Will this lead to something better in that regard?
Yeah, I think it's probably not just professional players. I think it's
men in general, probably.
It's players in Ireland of any age, and understanding their responsibility to the game goes beyond what happens on the pitch.
Which probably is not a message maybe that's enforced enough.
No, it's not. And listen, out of these cases, so little positivity comes from them. There's everyone loses. But I suppose what's been well documented, Richie Sadler wrote a really good article about that whole, highlighting the whole area of consent. And the understanding to, or the need to educate young men in particular about what consent is. And in all negative situations, you have to try and draw some positive. And I think that is highlighting that, and highlighting any potential misogynistic undercurrents that might exist within the game and stamp that out. So I think we're, for the better, the world has changed dramatically in the last 6 months, and rugby is no different. They have to have a good look at themselves and make sure that they change with the times.
And they have said that they're going to very much focus on the education of players in this regard, that it's something that maybe they didn't focus on enough. Like when you were signing contracts, would there ever have been somebody in the RFU or Leinster Rugby at the time saying, you need to behave in a certain way? It's not just what happens on the pitch. It's not just you winning games and scoring tries. You actually have to carry yourself and the Leinster brand and the Ireland brand in a certain way as well. Was that ever a message that you received?
Not really. I don't think there was a huge focus. I think that was an expectation anyway. I think when I started out, the game was just turning professional, so we were finding our way. But that's you know, that behaviour is you know, about life. It's not just specific to sport or rugby. That's just a life skill. And I think if we can teach it to our, you know, to a grassroots level and an understanding, particularly within rugby, and I'm only talking about rugby because I don't know what goes on in football.
But for us to believe that it's a rugby-specific thing would be pretty nice.
Yeah, but I can only talk from a rugby perspective myself, having been a professional, that there is clearly a need to re-educate our younger players, and we talk about respect in the game for referees. Well, obviously there's you know, clearly a need to respect the fairer sex in, you know, on the back of some of what we've read over the last few months.
Well, with the next time we probably hear the names Paddy Jackson, Stuart Holding, it'll be when they're being linked with clubs, and if it's not Exeter and Claremont, you wonder where in the world they will end up. But that's a story that's going to run and run. So on the pitch, Munster, pretty good trip to South Africa. 2 games, 2 wins. They are very much in the hunt for that home semi-final in the Pro 14, and that one game less ahead of potentially a Champions Cup final in Bilbao on the 12th of May. Connacht beaten by Glasgow, a late rally from Connacht, but that just put a gloss on the scoreboard, which really was a game in which they just suffered another heavy defeat. Glasgow still going for the Pro 14 title. Ulster kept their playoff hopes marginally alive by beating Ospreys 8-0 and certainly enhanced the hopes of playing Champions Cup rugby next season. They weren't helped by the fact that Scarlets put their second team out at Murrayfield and shipped 50 points to Edinburgh, which pretty much rules Ulster out of any chance of making the playoffs. And the big results, the most eye-catching results, is the fact that Treviso have gone to the RDS, beaten Leinster, 18 games. It's the first time they've managed to do it against Leinster away from home. I don't doubt too many people in the Leinster hierarchy will have lost much sleep over the last couple of nights about this, because there obviously are bigger fish to fry than Treviso at home when you're well set in your conference in the Pro 14. But at the same time, there are probably a number of guys that played on Saturday evening that thought they had a chance of at least forcing their way into the match day 23, and they're very disappointed.
I think that's all they were really playing for, realistically. Maybe with the exception of someone like Jordan Larmer, who possibly could have... Look, depending on injury circumstances, could have found himself in a starting role. I think it was, you know, it was largely a second string team. I think it's rare enough that the bookies get it so wrong. They were
plus 20, strong
plus 20,
team
plus
on paper.
29, which is quite the bet. But they were outstanding. It's not as though that we haven't seen that sort of performance. I don't know exactly, but Treviso have won 9 or 10, well, 10 games.
Between themselves and Zebre, they're pushing 15 wins.
It's new territory. You're tearing up what's gone on before with Italian teams. And it's, thankfully, it's a little bit of a shame that it didn't equate into a bit of Italian national team improvement, because, you know, it would have been great for the Six Nations. Could they have won one
Maybe
game?
It will.
Should they have beaten Scotland? Yes, they should have gotten the job done, but their club teams have very rarely been absolutely thumped.
Yeah, you know, that was just one off, 16 between them.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a new development in Pro 12 / Pro 14 rugby.
And listen, you're going to have to start, I think maybe did Leinster just have an expectation to turn up and get it done?
Yeah.
I would imagine so. When you've got 17 wins on the bounce against Italian opposition, it's hard not to let them, you know, the focus slip a little bit and just realising, you know, if we play reasonably well here, it'll be enough. But it wasn't. And particularly the fact that, you know, Treviso went behind a couple of times as well. They came out and took their opportunities, defended really well, even with Tibaldi in the bin. They, you know, they went even harder. And they were full value for their win. And I don't think it'll, like you said, I don't think Leo and Stuart Lancaster will lose a whole lot of sleep, because any of those players, you know, Jordy Murphy, you know, came on and did reasonably well. But Larmer was okay. But I don't think there's too many others that are really putting their hand up for selection. That team almost picks itself on the basis of the Saracens' performance too.
Yeah, well, Jordan Larmer was one of the players who'd come back from injury. We obviously hadn't seen him since the Six Nations Championship, and so there were a lot of people that were on the radar in terms of the injury update today from Stuart Lancaster. Roisin Lang was out there for Off the Ball. This was Lancaster on the general fitness bulletin and the update that he delivered today.
Well, it was great. I mean, it's great to have him back on the field last week. And you know, I think he saw 24th man at the weekend. So today's a good day for him. You know, reconnect with Johnny and Gary and those sorts of combinations. So, you know, we'll have a good couple of days, and he's a world-class player, in my opinion. You know, if there was one player that you didn't want to lose, you know, around the time we did, it was him. So it's a huge bonus to have him back.
And you expect him to hit the ground running. When we saw it with Gary when he came back with Ireland, how he was able to just...
Robbie's in better condition than I've ever seen him. I mean, if you look at his actual, the way they measure his speed, he's achieved his quickest speeds, he's done his best fitness test, he looks lean and fit, and he's such a good player, and he's been in every meeting. You know, it's not like he's been in a different part of the building, he's been in every meeting, so he's prepped, and I'm absolutely certain he'll be up to speed.
It was against Italy that the shoulder popped out as he scored that try. And after the game, Joe Schmidt was asked about Robbie Henshaw's prognosis, and he said, we expect him to be out for up to 3 to 4 months. And here we are now, end of April, and he's likely to be starting a Champions Cup semi-final. It's an unbelievable recovery.
Who's the surgeon? Who is the surgeon?
Bionic recovery.
It's pretty remarkable. I saw him actually in London the night of the Grand Slam game. He wasn't out celebrating with the lads. He went to where there was a pub booked for all the Irish in London to have a focal point, and he happened to be in there with his girlfriend. And I could appreciate he felt disconnected from the Slam because when you're not playing in that final game, you just don't feel part of it. But he was an integral part of the first two wins, you know, played reasonably well against France, was going to be man of the match in the second game against Italy before he dislocated his shoulder. But it's a pretty remarkable turnaround to think that not only is he back in half the time expected if it was 3-4 months, if it's a full shoulder dislocation, I understand modern science, you know, gives you, you know, the less invasive surgeries allow, you know, superior healing time, but that by any stretch of the imagination is a phenomenal recovery time. And to hear he's looking sharp, and he's obviously got an appetite, you know, to be playing in more European semi-finals with the disappointment of last year. I just wonder, you know, is Joe Schmidt and his coaching team looking down and thinking, yeah, it might be a European semi-final, but, you know, could, you know, for the summer tour and for, you know, for making sure that the injury is perfect, did we just hold him back a week? Is he, are Leinster getting full access to him? I don't know is the answer to that, but I wonder, would I be a little bit concerned, you know, on a big game like that, throwing him straight back in? If I was Joe Schmidt, I would be. But I can see from Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen's perspective that you have a player of that calibre back, fit him into 12 along with Ringrose.
They don't risk him, though, do they?
I don't. No, like I don't think you know. I don't. If he's not right, he's not going to play.
Not for a shoulder injury of that seriousness.
No, he's not going to. And I had a shoulder dislocation in 05, and for me, all I needed was clearance from the specialist that I wasn't going to do more damage. That my shoulder was conditioned to be able to take the impacts that I had 6 months previously.
If something was to happen to the shoulder, it had nothing to do with the injury.
No, it was going to be something separate or an unfortunate second injury to it that, you know, came out of a completely different contest and had absolutely no bearing on the work that had been done. So sometimes you just need, as a professional, you just need that security from someone that's been, you know, seen lots of recovery processes and knows what they're talking about. And if he does play this weekend, you know, it's less than 2 months since the 16th today? Yeah, almost to the day.
Yeah.
Nearly 2 months that from a shoulder dislocation. Wow.
It's incredible. So his return, if it indeed does transpire that he starts at the weekend, it's just intriguing as to what they do with this Leinster backline, because it all pivots around the fitness of Luke McGrath.
Mm.
And one player can have an impact on so many other players, because if he starts, well then it's likely James Lowe is going to start on the wing and you have to find a place for Issa Nathewa. Or is it likely that James Lowe starts on the wing? Is it Nathewa that automatically slips into that position because Ringrose and Henshaw are going to be in midfield, which is where Issa Nathewa has been playing?
Yeah, but Issa Nathewa has been better at 12 than he has been on the wing for the last couple of years, I think, in the semi-final.
He doesn't start at 12 if Ringrose and Henshaw are
He doesn't. And on the basis of his quarter-final performance, which could have been a man-of-the-match performance, you know, you can't drop your captain. You have to find a place for him. But I don't think wing is his best position anymore. I think he's starting to show his age. I think he's starting to show a little bit of vulnerability out in the wide spaces. I think that's why 12 suits him better.
But that's your only option,
isn't it? Congestion.
Well, the other option is not playing him, but is that
That's not a reality.
So he has to start on the wing.
So he's going to start. Yeah, he is going to, because defensively he, I think the firepower of the back three of Scarlets would not, isn't it? I don't think there's a David Strettel type stepper in there. I think Halfpenny, you know what you're going to get. He'll never go away, but I don't think he's going to really concern you if you're an old 35 or 36 year old worried about jinking feet of someone. And if, you know, depending on where Patchell plays, does he play a 10 or at fullback
as
well?
Steph Evans would fancy a crack often though, wouldn't he?
Steph Evans would, but maybe it's tactical, get him over onto that left wing. Steph Evans play on the left wing? Yeah, you just have to be smart about it. But I definitely thought it was the first time I'd ever seen a vulnerability to him in the semi-final last year. And I've always lauded Issa as one of the best players I ever played with, one of the most intelligent players, one of the ones that very rarely becomes unstuck. Mm-hmm. But age catches up with everyone, and that's why I do think at inside centre he has a security to be able to do as good a job as he has done in the past, but with less exposure to the crazy footwork of some, a back three player that can pull him apart.
So before we move on to Munster, if McGrath is fit, do you have Lowe and Atheu as the two wingers with Carney at fullback?
No, I don't think you do. I think Fergus McFadden starts.
Who misses out then?
I think Lowe probably misses out. I think on a defensive basis, I do think that Stuart Lancaster and Leo are very attack orientated, but Lowe talked about it in Sunday papers yesterday about taking a while to get and understand
the
defensive systems, and that's been quite apparent that he defends very differently than everyone else. But I think McFadden absolutely starts. He's the first winger.
There's no real point in having Lowe on the bench then, is there? You bring your experience in at scrum half then on the bench. So Jamieson Gibson Park gets the nod then. Ahead of James Lowe.
Probably because of the injury around Luke McGrath as well. Yeah, like he's not going to be 100%. He's not 100% fit. There's no way. He wasn't near 100% fit. I watched him in the warm-up of the Saracens game, and you could sense about how he was carrying himself. He wasn't sprightly and bouncing around and energetic. You could tell that he was fighting in his head the issues that he was having around his injury.
I started this conversation by saying his fitness was pivotal for the rest of the back line, but from what you're saying, it's really not. James Lowe doesn't get in anyway.
It does, because Henshaw's not guaranteed
well,
to start.
Well, this is all of the
on the basis that he does.
The power talk from
it's such a nice
Stuart
headache,
Lancaster
isn't it?
Today.
It's such a nice headache. But how do you leave James Lowe out at the same time? But
it's harsh.
I don't see James Lowe being picked ahead of Fergus McFadden.
Okay.
And can you drop your captain? No. I think personally they might go if Robbie Henshaw is fit. They might go with Henshaw on the bench, maybe. I'm just wondering, does he cover? He covers fullback. Has he run there at all this season? If one of the wingers gets injured, he can go
Carberry
there.
Covers Carney, that as well,
yeah,
doesn't
Carberry
he?
Covers there, and potentially the wing. Is he a great bench player? I don't know, but it's the first time that they're getting into that really difficult situation of having not a full deck to choose from, but 9 or 10 backs vying for 7 positions, and all playing well and all had good form over the course of the season.
So Munster, they got the sun on their backs, they got some vitamin D into their bones, and they come back home from Bloemfontein with a win. They double up on the wins over there, which is just exactly what Johan van Graan would have been hoping for. And he gets the news that Keith Earls has staged a Robbie Henshaw-like recovery and is probably going to be a massive bonus for them in their starting 15. And as the days go by, you just start to feel a lot better and a lot more hopeful from a Munster point of view on their chances heading to this game of Bordeaux.
I always liked their chances.
Did you, yeah?
I always did. I think they're a vastly improved team on last year. They managed to get to a semi-final probably when they shouldn't, playing on raw emotion. I think they've added a huge amount of the personnel haven't changed massively, but I think the tactically they've gotten an awful lot better. I think they've got Keatley playing really well. I think Conor Murray playing the best rugby of his life. A pack that's a very clear idea as to what they need to do with the source of ball they're getting from scrum and line out. and they don't know when they're beaten. You know, they go 14-0 down to the Cheetahs. I saw it on social media. I saw two early tries within half an hour. I thought lots of teams have struggled down there, and I couldn't believe watching that they'd managed to sneak it with that Conor Murray 55-metre penalty or whatever it was.
They went down early to the Southern Kings. They went down early to Racing.
But that never fazed them. They're one team that absolutely don't get fazed by that. If they concede early, they know they have firepower and that they can score themselves, and they'll create opportunities. It's just a matter of taking advantage of that. And that's why I think it becomes a mental battle at semi-final level and final level. And it would be so interesting to see the two Irish provinces in the final from a tactical perspective, because there would be such huge nervousness knowing each other so well. And that's why I hope it does happen, because I'd be really interested to see tactically who was able to come out on top. We have a while to go before any of that happens, but yeah. I like Munster down there. They won't be afraid of Racing. They've played them four times over the last 3 years, or even the last 2 years. They have the back-to-back
seasons.
3-1 in that.
So what sort of game is it, given that we've seen them play so often recently, what sort of a game is it that you're expecting this weekend? Because even in this season alone, it was a real arm wrestle in Thomond Park. That Conor Murray block down was the difference between the teams. And it was a bit of a shootout then under the roof in Paris.
Yeah, but you've got conditions similar to that, with the sun on their back. And you could look on, you could have looked on the lead in to their semi-final in a couple of different ways. I've spoken to some of the Leinster boys about the fortnight down in South Africa, and they really thought that it took it out of them. That the travel, that the two games, being on a mini tour, something that a lot of them weren't used to, really, it sucked the life out of them, and they felt a little bit jaded afterwards. Whereas you can look on the flip side of the positivity that they've taken from time away, two really good performances, two good wins, and a little bit of warm weather training that's going to set them up nicely for what the likely conditions are on Sunday afternoon. So I just think Munster are maturing really well. They've got the confidence of the players that have played Grand Slam, and they will not be fazed in any shape or form by what Racing comes at them, be it Dan Parkey or Dan Carter or Pat Lambie. I think they'll absolutely fancy their chances. Getting Keith Earls back fit is a massive bonus. I think he's been brilliant for them this year. And to get him back in the team, I think that galvanises others. He's one of those players you see in your team and you go, we're in better shape for having him there. Do you know what? We've got a great shot, because he's a game breaker. So I really feel confident for... I almost feel more confident for Munster than I do for Leinster. I do. I think
Scarlets... You think getting Racing out of Paris is key?
Yeah, but like you think about the game that they had in Paris. It was a two-pointer. They had to knock over a goal. You know, Machinot knocked over a goal with 3 minutes to go. There's nothing between these teams. There was nothing in the first game in Thomond Park. You know, as you said, that Conor Murray blocked down. It looked as though it was going to be 6-0 for most of the game. And then there were two scores where Racing got a losing bonus point out of it. So I just sense that, yes, that these Munster players haven't maybe that same level of experience that you think of Munster players of old, of being in semi-finals and quarter-finals every year, but they did. They were in the Aviva last year against Saracens. They got well beaten by a much better team, but
you think they'll have taken a lot from them.
They're a far, far better team than that. They're better drilled. They're better coached. Even though the personnel again hasn't changed, they've just had more time with the players, and I think they're developing them into a really tight-knit team, and you can see it. You can't judge anything by social media, but they seem to have a great time down in South Africa. They enjoyed being away from a goldfish bowl that, you know, living in Limerick around Champions Cup time can be as well. There's no escaping it. So it must have been pretty refreshing to them. So
if you take a Leinster-Munster double, you'll get decent enough odds on it. They're both such tough games, but each game on its individual merits, you fancied the two Irish teams.
I do.
This is going to happen. We're going to Bilbao for the final of our dreams.
I would certainly. I think Leinster, because they've got home advantage with Dublin, I think, and the confidence that they played with and the clarity they played with against Saracens, their defence looked outstanding. And if it's as good as that, I think Scarlets will really struggle. That was the I think the Leinster defence is the Leinster defensive system almost looks a level up on what Ireland are doing. I think it's only tweaked and modified, but I think there's a lot more clarity as to, you know, how they want to play, the spacings that they're getting. Leinster aren't beaten on the outside like Ireland are beaten, and I think, you know, just the small little tweaks that Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen have put in place to add to the Irish defensive system has really served them well. And I do fancy them to just have enough for Scarlets, but they're a dangerous team. The Welsh teams are always dangerous. Welsh teams are most dangerous to Ireland, and the Welsh regions are most dangerous to the Irish regions because they know how to play. They play with freedom and no inhibitions, and they can score in, at the drop of a hat. You know, they can score very quickly.
No fear whatsoever come to the Aviva, sure they
will. Well, they won in the semi-final, you know, at Pro 14 stage against Leinster this time last year. In fact, they even won in the RDS.
Yeah.
You know, they've been to the Aviva. They won against Munster in the Aviva again in May last year. So no fear whatsoever. You know, they've obviously had a rest week. You know, they sent their seconds up to Edinburgh. They've got a great combination, good front row. You know, a couple of beefy boys in the second row. Tyke Byrne playing the best rugby of most Irishmen in Europe at the moment. James Davis, Barkley, Shingler playing the best rugby probably in Wales. Certainly the back row in Wales this year. And then lots of firepower in the back line. No Jonathan Davis, which Leinster will be relieved, but Adley Parks and Scott Williams have been good this year. So it's an intriguing double matchup. But I think, you know, my heart and my head says Leinster will sneak it, but I also think that Munster will just get the job done.
Okay, it would be amazing. And if there's an Irish team in the final, it will be live and off the ball. We all want to go to Bilbao and get some early May sun in northern Spain.
I'm done anyway, sorry. I'm definitely going. You should join. I'm going out on the Thursday to the Sunday.
Oh, are you?
You
should join, as if we're just, We will. I think one of these teams are going to win.
They will.
We'll be there.
We will be there.
We will be there. So it's just a question of whether it's the final that we've all hoped for. We do forget it was an all-Irish final 6 years ago, but Leinster Ulster just didn't have the same feel as...
There's way more spice to this. Way more spice. The biggest stage in Europe, you know, we've rarely met at knockout stages. You know, obviously 09, 03, sorry, not 03, 06, 09. So to go a step beyond the semi-final and have it all on the line at the end, it's amazing. Unthinkable for each set of fans to watch the other celebrate in Bilbao. But it would just... It would lend itself to a special day for one team.
It would. It'd be spectacular. We're going to make you feel old now, because I'm sure you're aware, but 20 years since the Irish under-19 side lifted the World Cup, Declan Kidney was in charge. You beat all manner of top sides at that grade in France, including the French, South Africans as well. How big a deal was it at the time?
Yeah, I think...
At that age, is it the be-all and end-all?
No, because I don't think it's like the under-20s World Cup that's had a chance to have a good run, and we have to let it be known that there was no big three in there. There was no New Zealand, there was no England, and there was no Australia. So you take those three teams out of the equation, you have a considerably better chance of winning any tournament. That said, we did beat the best teams in the tournament, and beating South Africa in the quarterfinal, Argentina in the semi-final, and then France in the final, which were definitely, along with ourselves, the best teams in the competition. So it was a big deal because we're playing for Ireland. Lots of us hadn't played for Ireland, and yeah, we got into the knockout stages. That's not something that you ordinarily associate with Irish rugby teams, to get into the quarterfinal, semi-final, and into a final of a major competition. So I think the excitement and the appreciation for how big an impact that it made only retrospectively was realised by us by the greeting in the airport on the way home.
I remember that, yeah.
And then I think the acknowledgement and the realisation that we had some bloody good players in that team too. I don't know,
five or six that had gone on to full caps.
Yeah, well, three senior internationals, yourself, Dunica, O'Callaghan and Paddy Wallace.
Kieran Campbell didn't get a full cap. Maybe not.
I'm just going with the notes that were made for me by somebody else.
Okay.
So well, I can blame
I'll pick
else.
Holes in them.
I don't remember Kieran Campbell.
Maybe he didn't. He's been in Ireland camps lots of times, but maybe he didn't get a full cap. Definitely not. Maybe in the... Out in Samoa and Tonga.
So you're embarrassing us now. We'll check this now after the...
Let's check afterwards when...
JP's already working
I can't be found out. but yeah, we'd lots of other good players that didn't quite make the grade that were good provincial players. Shane Moore played with Connacht for a few years. Obviously, Paddy. Guys that played, you know, a really good club level and you would have thought... Looking back again, there were a better standard than they actually achieved. Should have gone on to international honours, but I think we'd a good team spirit. We kind of didn't realise how well we were going, and we had Declan who managed it unbelievably well and started talking to us. We had this funny thing about. The further we got in the competition, the worse bus we got, and like none of us paid any attention to this except Declan took serious umbrage. Have you noticed anything about what about the quality of the bus? And the further we've got in the competition, it's like what? No, we haven't. It's been grand. They've been all right buses, but our bus in the final broke down, and that was the end of it with him. He was fired up by it, but we went on and won well. Then in Toulouse in the final and. Yeah, it was a good stepping stone. Do you know what it was? It was a confidence boost to, certainly to me and to other players, of then being able to take the next step on the international stage.
That you can be Ireland and you can win.
Yeah, and be the best. Don't be afraid to, And it's easier to come into a culture where there's been an expectation to win in the past and the players know how it's what it's like to get it done. You know, we didn't step into that at all. You know, it was barren years throughout the 90s. There was no excitement around really around the Irish team or expectation, maybe not excitement, but expectation to achieve or to win or to push close for honours. That was never in our psyche. So all of a sudden to do that and achieve and go, they are just human. Why can't we bring this on to other teams that we play and other representative teams? And I think that did happen with some of those players that went on to achieve a full cap.
Okay, brilliant stuff as always. Next time we talk to you, we might be previewing an all-Irish.
I hope so.
European
I hope so.
Champions
it would
Cup
be
rugby
so
final.
Great. It would be it almost the year that we've had. It almost feels I feel it in my waters that we're going to get it.
That's good enough for me, Brian O'Driscoll. Thanks a million.
Thanks a million for watching. If you want to subscribe, well, there's the button right there. If you want to see more videos, hit that down there.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.